Hi, everybody. This is Sue Hall and Tristan McDonald, and we have yet another wonderful podcast for you. This time, one of Tristan's friends, Henry, has kindly agreed to be interviewed, and we just look forward to hearing what he has to say with his journey on dyslexia. So here we go. Good morning, Henry. How are you?
Good, good.
Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you. And we want to know about your journey. Where did it start? How old were you when you discovered you had a different way of thinking? Or did you never discover? Or how did it happen?
Yeah, so I went to a school called Coolchena. All my family had gone through French immersion, so they put me in Coolchena to go do French immersion. And then I believe in the second or third grade, one of the teachers mentioned to my parents that I was having some difficulty learning French. I mean, obviously, if I have the difficulty with English. So they suggested that I go get tested for different learning disabilities. So I did a series of testing, and then it came back that I was dyslexic or had learning disabilities. I don't remember all the different ones. And so after that, they took me out of French immersion, and then I wasn't really catching up with the rest of the class. So then my parents took me and put me in Fraser Academy, like a private school that's specifically for people with dyslexia and other learning disabilities.
What grade did you go into?
I believe that was grade 3 or 4, so quite young. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed in Fraser Academy until grade 8, and then transferred to the High School Prince of Wales, which was a public high school. I kind of had a deal with my parents that if I stayed at Fraser for X amount of time, I could pick the school I wanted to go to. And I picked Prince of Wales because they had a good hockey program, and I used to play a lot of ice hockey. And then after not doing too well again in public school, I went to another special school called Brain Boost, which is like a tutoring program. It's online school, but they use tutors to teach the class. So it's a lot of one-on-one learning. And I graduated through Brain Boost. And yeah, that was my whole education journey.
Wow, that's quite the journey.
When you went to these schools, do you find their way of teaching helpful? Did you find Fraser Academy helpful? Did they approach you differently, teach you differently?
Yeah. So Fraser Academy, I'll be honest, when I was younger, I definitely had kind of an issue with it. My brothers went to 2 private schools. He went to St. John's and then another private school called Shawnigan. And out of all the private school circles, Fraser Academy was always kind of ridiculed because it's specifically for people with learning disabilities.
That's interesting. Yes. I didn't realize that because I've heard that obviously if you're going to go to a special school and you have this way of thinking, that you're going to have very nice teachers who are very caring and very aware of your learning style. But I had never heard that that school in itself had that sort of reputation from other schools. Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't think it's really like a bad thing. I mean, more in the sense, like I used to play a lot of sports. So I used to play hockey, and so a lot of the other kids there, they all kind of went to these different private schools. And so the ones who went to Fraser Academy, it's like you have to have some kind of learning disability to go there. Because, I mean, we're kids, so we're always teasing each other about the different schools. So I always kind of had an issue with Fraser Academy, but in hindsight, I think it did quite a bit of good. There's a lot of emphasis on like extracurricular activities. They have a really, really good music program. That was always something you kind of look forward to. We like recorded music. We would always do cover songs. And then every year they would do like a concert. So every year I would essentially play on stage in front of the whole school. So it was really good in that sense. They had a good sports program, good art program. So there was a lot of emphasis on like the artistic side of things. So that was really nice.
Were they trying to focus primarily on what you were good at?
Yeah, there's a lot more of an appreciation for the arts, pretty much. Like, no one cared, like, oh, you got the best grade in math or in English, or you wrote some great paper. It was more like, oh, you won the music award, or you did really good at the concert. Like, that was more glorified, I guess. Yeah, it was a lot of just being like, hey, even if you're not that great at, say, spelling, or you're not that great at comprehension, or whatever it is, or you have a learning disability with English, you can be better at the arts, pretty much. I really like that emphasis on it. And it showed that it's like, okay, if you can't spell, but you can make a great song, there's an appreciation, if that made sense. I'm not sure if I'm explaining myself well.
No, I totally get it. It makes sense. They're putting the students who have what they would label learning disability towards their strength.
So how was the transition into the Prince of Wales School? Was that a bit of an eye-opener, or was it fun, or was it difficult, or...
I guess I could say it was difficult. I mean, with Fraser Academy, they were always kind of on your case, if that made sense. So you could never really skip school. maybe you didn't have a sense of responsibility or like a sense of duty. Like you kind of always had someone holding your hand. And obviously at a public school, that's not there. But when going to Prince of Wales, I did go into like the skills program. So I did have extra time on tests. I had an extra block to study and to work on things. For English and math, they had like a skills class. And that was like a special thing that Prince of Wales did. Yeah.
But they expected you to be a little bit more in charge, if you like, of your own destiny.
Yeah, more responsible. I should probably explain that. So at Fraser Academy, you had smaller classes, and then every day you went and had like a tutoring session, and you'd have kind of a one-on-one tutor, and they would kind of keep tabs on you and check up on you. And then also because it's a smaller class size, and there would actually be recourse if you didn't show up to your class, because everyone kind of knew each other. It was a much smaller school. Prince of Wales, it was just, you need to show up, you need to put in the effort, you need to put your head down and work on this. And they had two programs, the Gold Program, I believe it was called, and then the Skills Program. And both of those were geared towards kids with learning disabilities, but it was still, you have to show up. They would notice if you didn't show up to the Skills Program and you might get told off because it's a smaller class. But for all your other courses, you had the ability to kind of skip out, or you had the ability to not try. No one was holding your hand. So I think learning that sense of duty or responsibility to actually get the work done was important. And that's definitely something that took me a while to learn and to stop procrastinating. So,
you seem very together in yourself. Do you feel that you have a bit of a resentment towards this way of thinking? Or do you feel that it was just your life and I'm getting on with it?
Yeah, when I was younger, there's definitely a big resentment. I mean, I try not to be kind of negative about it because I don't think that does anything good. But yeah, I mean, being told, oh, you need to go to a special school. Oh, here's some extra time. Here's a specialized tutor. I understand in hindsight, it was just people trying to help and be kind. But when you accomplish the same thing as someone else, but you've had like a tutor help you, or you've had an extra half an hour on a test, you feel like you kind of cheated almost. And I always have an issue with cheating. So
yeah, it's a little bit of a hollow victory.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And one of my adults said to me, he was always as good as the person next to him. So when you said about cheating, that picture popped in my head.
It's funny because, like, I mean, I got myself tested when I was young, but I never went to any special schools for people with disability. And in a way, I kind of wish I did go into more of that, because in high school, I don't think they knew quite how to handle a lot of people thought like me. Because though I was given extra time during tests, and every now and then I was given scribe and kind of a tutor during a class, for me, it was just kind of putting floaties on my arm and letting me float above water. And then, okay, you've passed class, you passed school, off you go. And I wasn't really learning the material. I was just kind of regurgitating it when it came to writing a test. And so their way of teaching for me, though it was good for a lot of people at the school, it wasn't good for me to retain any of it. I was just repeating it. And so I had to get a tutor outside of school. And that was very helpful. But in a way, I wish I got the chance to go into, let's say, Fraser Academy or Prince of Wales to get that experience.
When you finished school, what was the work scene like? What did you want to do?
I always really liked cooking. So I went and I worked in a couple of restaurants. I first started at a French restaurant downtown, dishwashing, and I did a little bit of prep work. I decided I wanted to go into insurance. So I tried to get my level one insurance license, which allows you to sell insurance. You can do a little bit of what we would call underwriting, kind of making the insurance policy. I did that at Langara, failed the first time. And then I was doing some summer work, like working on boats, because I live right beside a marina. And my grandfather used to boat quite a bit, and my dad used to have a boat. So I was working with this guy on his boat. And then I met his friend who was an insurance broker, and he suggested I go to do this program at BCIT called West Coast Training. It was like a 1 week course. I did that. I got my insurance license and then went and worked at this insurance brokerage, just doing auto insurance. And then after realizing I wanted to do more commercial stuff, I went and did a 2-year program at BCIT called the General Insurance and Risk Management Program. And that kind of gives you the highest insurance licensing you can get. And then also through it, you can become a risk manager, which is kind of controlling risk for an organization or mitigating it. So I did that, and I just graduated in May of 2019. And I still need to do a little bit of work to get my CIP, which stands for Certified Insurance Professional. And since then, I've been working at this company, which does solely marine insurance.
How did you manage with your studying? And congratulations for getting so far.
Thanks.
Did you let them know that you had a learning challenge when you went to BCIT?
Yes. So at BCIT, it was nice to take full advantage of that. The program was quite difficult, and I needed to use my dyslexia card, as you could say. It helped quite a bit. And especially because I had all the documentation, because you can't just be like, oh, I have dyslexia. I had all this documentation. Here are all the schools I went to. Here are all my diagnoses. Anyways, I'm not going to repeat that word if I said it wrong or whatever. So I used that, and I was able to delay some of my courses. Like I would take like one or two courses out of the week. So I wasn't on the same schedule as the rest of the program. And then I was able to do my tests in a different area, but I don't think I got extra time for it because my report wasn't up to date. So they wouldn't give me extra time, but because I had evidence of having a learning disability, I essentially was able to do my exams in kind of a closed off room with earplug. Well, everyone got earplugs, but it was kind of segregated. So you didn't get bothered by anyone. So that was quite nice.
Do you discover that textbooks could be spoken to you by then, or did you have to read?
Yeah, I did, but like reading them made a lot more sense. To be honest, there was no kind of easy way around it. All the teachers at BCIT in the insurance program specifically were great. All you needed to do is just spend the time. Kind of all of us would get together and we'd stay at BCIT till like 8 or 10 regularly, and sometimes come in on the weekends. You just had to kind of grind through it and get it done. You did the best you could with the time available. You would feel pretty down after you did an exam because this insurance stuff isn't...
not a real fun experience.
It's challenging. So just having the attitude of like, you did the best you could with the time available. All you need to do is get the passing mark so you can get your licensing. As long as it worked, you're good. Like all those teachers were really, really good. And I was surprised. Specifically, the insurance program teachers were just great.
That's like, really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes learning just that much more efficient and fun.
Yeah, and especially on such a dry topic, yeah. So most people would find it, yeah.
Knowing that you have this way of thinking, what made insurance so interesting for you?
I always liked the idea of sales. I do like talking to people. I mean, the other nice thing about sales is that the harder you work, the more you make. And I was talking to my dad about what kind of career path I should go into, and he always kind of pushed me towards doing some kind of trade because I wasn't the most studious. Like being an electrician or a carpenter, I always liked the idea of fixing something up and then selling it. So my idea was like, okay, I'll become a carpenter. Once I get good at that, I can start buying houses and flipping them. That was kind of my goal. And then I guess it was maybe around 2008, like the housing market was very unstable. So I was talking to my dad and he mentioned that his friend had done very well in insurance. And the whole thing was that once you sell the product every year, you get that renewal. It's like you're building a book of business. You don't need to constantly find new clients, and then you can specialize in something and then have a better understanding. So then my thought was like, well, insurance is all about risk and calculating risk and figuring out risk management and things like that. The whole risk side of it, it's like you do need to kind of think differently. Notice a lot of the other people in my class, they were great, but I don't know, some things were just more like obvious. I'm trying not to...
No, you're better at thinking outside the box. Or it's your natural way.
Yeah, there's just a lot of different things to kind of think about and to take into consideration. So it allows your mind to kind of run free and kind of be more creative. It's not as linear. So there's not always like one correct answer. And so the interesting thing is different insurance companies have different ways of looking at different risks. It's kind of creative in that sense. What's the risk to the organization? What kind of risk can you transfer via insurance, via specific types of contracts? And then what things, if they do happen, are going to end your business? And then what kind of contingency plan are you going to have on hand? And then the other thing is I'm quite ADD in a sense. There's insurance for everything. So, if I don't find house insurance interesting, which I don't, I could find boat insurance interesting.
You know, I'd never even thought of looking at insurance from that point of view. To me, it always sort of sounds deadly boring, end of story, right? But that's a really good take on it, that I understand about the creativity and I understand about all the different viewpoints that you need. And that's really cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm learning.
I really like history. And if you want to check out some cool history, I would check out Lloyd's of London. It was a coffee shop in England 200 years ago, and you had these merchants that would be sending ships around the world. And so what they would do is they would say, okay, let's pool our losses together. So the premiums of the many will pay for the losses of the few. And so they would write down everything that's on their boat, and then they would go to Lloyd's, and you would have these different wealthy individuals who would say, I will like underwrite this. So they'll sign underneath this document that shows that they are taking on the risk if something happens to their boat, and they would charge a premium for this. And that's kind of how insurance in the modern day got started, because they were like, well, what's going to happen? How do the seas look? How long is this person going to be out on the seas for? What's the probability of something happening?
No weather forecast. Yeah.
There's a lot of like gambling. It's interesting, but you could see how that could get creative.
So fascinating. You totally see the appeal behind it, especially for somebody with dyslexia who thinks about everything all at once.
Do you ever tell your clients that you're dyslexic?
No, never.
The stigma behind it's still pretty bad.
I don't feel that you've got the stigma. I feel that you might think other people would have it. Am I right?
I don't think the clients that I deal with, I do only boat insurance. So our clients, we definitely get some characters, and I really do enjoy talking to them. Yesterday, I had quite a few conversations with some really cool people, and they have cool experiences. Like they've been out on boats for months without seeing land. They've gone through crazy storms. They've really kind of experienced life. And so you deal with some interesting characters. I don't think any of them would have an issue if I mentioned it, but I'm just focusing on the task at hand. It's not something I'm thinking about, I guess.
When you grew up, how was it with the family, if you don't mind me asking? Were they supportive?
Yeah, my parents have both been very supportive, but I do have two older brothers. I mean, getting teased or getting messed with, it could have been about everything. Yes, getting teased about being dyslexic. I won't go into it too much. I mean, in hindsight, I kind of laugh at it. And that's just what brothers do. And there's kind of a big age gap. So my eldest brother is 7 years older than me. And then the middle one is 6 years older than me. And they both were, I guess, lack of a better word, kind of ruffians. They both played rugby. The eldest one boxed. Yeah, so there's always kind of boyishness in the house. I used to play hockey, and I played lacrosse, and my middle brother did as well. So we would put on our gear, and all his friends would come over, and we would all fight and things like that. So, yeah. But there was definitely some teasing about, I guess, specifically Fraser Academy. It always kind of annoyed me because they were just like, oh, like, you got special treatment. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was anything bad. We're brothers, so we're going to tease each other about our weaknesses.
Is there any, like, frustration within the family?
I mean, I could see that they were really frustrated, but it was about two things. And I don't think it was about me being dyslexic. I definitely didn't like the idea of going to a special school. I was very belligerent at school. So I did used to get into fights here and there, and I wouldn't want to participate. Like, we have to sign this thing saying we're going to follow the rules of the school. I'd never sign it. I refused. So I was very stubborn in that sense. So when it came to doing homework, my parents having to deal with me being stubborn and kind of ridiculous, I think that bothered them. They were always very supportive of being dyslexic. They would point out to me when I got better at something. I remember my dad being like, your reading or your comprehension's gotten a lot better. This was like a year or two ago, and it kind of threw me off. But yeah, so they've always been supportive in that sense, but they definitely got frustrated with me just not wanting to do things, me skipping out on school or just not behaving properly. And then I think the other aspect of it was maybe that both of my brothers kind of did similar things. I believe my eldest brother is kind of the most studious, but he's still kind of anti-authority in a sense. And same with my middle brother. So we all kind of messed around and weren't kind of proper private school kids. So then when it came down to me, they're like, oh, here's the third one who's doing the exact same thing as the other two. I was like the saving grace, and I didn't pull through. So for example, like if you're my parents and you're in some social circle and their kids went all the way through school and saw good grades and then went off to university, me and my brothers didn't do that. We all jumped around between schools. I don't think my eldest brother failed any years, but both me and my middle brother did. Not showing up. Yeah, just being boys and then not going to university on time. Me going to a trade school and not like proper university, especially because I didn't have the grades. But in hindsight, I could see my parents kind of being frustrated with that, but I know that they appreciate it because we are doing well. We've been able to learn about ourselves a lot better. And it's not just kind of this cookie cutter. Like, my dad's a lawyer. His dad was an electrician, and he actually came from Finland. we didn't follow that typical path of you go to university, you get your degree in business or become a lawyer, and then you go on to work at your dad's firm. There was none of that. So I think that would be more frustrating than my dyslexia, just for the amount of effort and time and money that my parents put into our educations. My dad was gung-ho on making us have a good education.
May I share a little bit of what I would term good news now? If that's okay with you?
Yeah.
There's a book out there called The Gift of Dyslexia, and it's written by Ron Davis. And this gentleman discovered that we have a particular way of thinking and learning. And the gift that we have is this ability to alter our perception. I'll try and keep this as short as I can, okay? When a person is imagining something three-dimensional, if you close your eyes and you imagine something like an elephant, for example, there's a part of you that's doing the looking when you imagine. Does that make sense? Yeah, if you close your eyes, just imagine anything that you like. But know that when you have closed your eyes, there's still a part of you that's looking at that object in your imagination. You're actually looking at it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that seems pretty normal.
Well, that's because you're you. Oh dear, and you're normal to you. So if you have this object and you're able to look at it from somewhere, he calls it the mind's eye, and we can move the mind's eye. So if I kept that object still, I can move my mind's eye and see it from the side and see it from the back and see it from the other side. I could see it from anywhere I wanted to if I chose to.
Yeah.
You've still got that look on your face of, well, yeah, of course I can. Okay, so that's perfect. Now, the point is, in the real world, it makes us very good at certain things. It's probably why you were good at lacrosse and good at hockey, because Wayne Gretzky, for example, knows that he sees the whole game from above.
Okay.
Right? And that's what makes him Wayne Gretzky. However, if you put a printed letter in front of you now, so say I have a lowercase d on my hand, if I start looking at that lowercase d from all different angles, it's going to look like a p from 180 for a start. Okay,
yeah.
That's not useful. And when we're at school and we're being asked to recognize these letters and we're being asked to read, then people assume that because our real eyes are looking at that word, we're seeing what they see. They don't know that we have this way of thinking, that we might be seeing things from all different angles.
Hmm.
And actually, we don't know it, but all we do know is we're not sure what's in front of us.
Yeah.
So that's where the first challenge comes in. This is our gift. I could go on for ages about the wonderful things that happen because we have this way of thinking. And it's a little bit like you were saying, you can view a certain situation with all the different risks from all different angles. And it's easy. It's because you're you. You have that ability. So if you're an event planner, if you're an architect, if you're a tradesperson, if you're a carpenter, people are very good at what they do because they have this way of thinking. But put us in the two-dimensional world of print, and that's a different story because we don't want to be seeing letters from different angles.
Yeah.
Now, the next thing is, apart from that, we're in an education system which assumes that we all think with the sound of words. So that means that they think we all have an internal conversation, we all talk to ourselves. But because we have this beautiful way of thinking, which is very three-dimensional and image-based, we actually prefer the image-based visual thinking process and feeling process. In other words, we're not verbal conceptualizers, we're non-verbal conceptualizers. Now, our education system is built for the verbal ones. In other words, say they're the little PC computers and we just happen to be the Apple Mac.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with our computer. We are not miswired. We are not learning disabled. We just happen to learn in a different system.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest example I can give you is when you're being asked to read as a child, you're usually being asked to read phonetically. So when you see the letters C-A-T, you're supposed to go C-A-T-A. We just don't do that. It's not in our wheelhouse. But because the system says we should, that's how we're taught. And you will have been given a lot of that. You'll have been given extra help with sounding out, and we should all be these auditory processors. You with me?
Yes.
The should word is what I object to, because we can learn perfectly well the way we learn visually, but we don't do sounding out. And the last part of it, there's three parts, this beautiful process, this PC and Apple Mac world. But the third part is that because we think in pictures, if I say to you, picture a boat, no problem. Picture your house, picture a car, picture a skateboard, no problem at all. Picture the meaning for the.
Yeah, no.
There's not one. And then picture, yeah, the meaning, no. Picture the meaning for of, and picture the meaning for as.
Yeah.
217 little words make up half of what we read, Henry. Plus, as we get older, we get concepts. So I'll guarantee you that two-thirds of what we read has no image-based meaning whatsoever. Especially in the insurance world. Can you imagine all those textbooks about statistics and mitigating? And I mean, what's the image for that? Do you know what I'm saying? So if you put all of that together, you've got this wonderful way of thinking, this system that doesn't work for you because it's PC and your Apple Mac, and the fact that we're not given enough images to keep an image going. So you get to the bottom of the page and you think, what was that about, right? That's what makes up the challenge. But the good news is that Tristan has done something about that with one of the programs that we run. So all I'm saying this for is just a little different perspective on this. That if you're in an education system that is very, very PC, right, and this testing comes from PC and the extra remedial stuff comes from PC and Fraser Academy comes from PC in terms of learning to read and do math and that type of thing, then it's easy to build up this picture of not being able to do what everybody else can do. But you can. You just have to do it your way.
Yeah. Interesting.
Being able to picture something is something I've always been able to do. And I've talked to a few people about this, and a lot of people can't seem to do it. But when I picture a car, I can imagine an actual 3D car and be able to spin it around, open up the bonnet, take out the engine. I've asked other people if they do that, and they go, no, I can't do that. But when it comes to putting an image behind the word the and other words like, it's been very helpful for me, at least, to create my own image. That's one of the reasons why I took this program. It's helped me to really cement definition of certain words in my way.
I'm curious, because people listening to this podcast won't realize this, but Henry's face, there's a lot of processing going on here. So I'm really curious to know what you thought of that. That was a lot of information in a very short time. What's going through your head right now?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to understand. I'm just trying to understand what you're saying. My thought is that, yeah, I get what you're saying with the visualization, and it makes sense to me. My thought is, if something comes naturally like that, yes, I mean, if you're really having difficulty with learning something, then use whatever's easiest for you to understand or comprehend it. But learning how to read how other people do as well, now you have kind of two skills compared to just one, like, if that makes sense. Like going through Fraser Academy, and kind of their slogan was teaching us how to learn. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you have both. And I think obviously me trying to comprehend words has been more difficult, but only recently have I started to appreciate books more. So having that other aspect of learning, being able to slightly kind of switch your brain, I think is good, because if you're predisposed to being dyslexic, you're always going to have that. So having the ability to learn the other way, you're just getting better at two things. I feel like a lot of people nowadays, trying to say this in a nice way, but like, people are more prone to be like, hey, here's my problem. Like, wanting to be more victimized, if that makes sense. They get some kind of credit, or they get some kind of brownie points. And I think that now with dyslexia, I think it's almost viewed more as a gift, because if you look at most of the people throughout history, it's like, I know Da Vinci was supposedly dyslexic. So was Edison, Churchill, yeah, Einstein. I don't know. I think there's kind of a social shift of how people view it. And I don't think it should be viewed as you have this problem, or that it's an issue. As you mentioned, I guess it is kind of a gift, and it allows you to look at things in a different way. And I know I've had quite a few people mention to me that I do think about things in a different way. I don't know. I always try to look at everyone else's side of the story. I don't care how egregious their opinions are or their views are. Like, try to understand. Yeah. And maybe that's from people not trying to understand me, or maybe that's from me always trying to understand how other people think or view things, just because I went to these special schools. Yeah. Well, you were just saying how people try to say that they understand the way that, I guess, people who are dyslexic view things, and how they're still viewing it from their point of view. And I think that's true with everything. It frustrates me. I can't remember the name of this book, but it was a really short book, but it was talking about, you have your perception of reality, and then you have someone else's perception of reality, and then you have your perception of how you view their reality. So in that sense, a lot of it's very subjective. And I don't follow the idea that everything is subjective. I think there are objective truths.
My favorite quote, Henry, is, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are.
Yeah.
And perception is incredibly powerful, right? So just to let you know that when we work with somebody who has this way of thinking, we show them how to control their perception. If this mind's eye of yours is able to do its own thing and go off wherever it wants to, it's important for the individual to have that responsibility and to be able to control their perception. So Ron discovered that if you make a parking spot for your mind's eye above and behind your head, it sees the same as your real eyes. So in the 3D world, if it needs to be out there, it can be. But in the world of print, where you need an accurate perception and your real eyes and your mind's eye need to see that lowercase d from the same angle, then you can learn to control your perception. For me, because of what I do, that's the most important part, because everybody who helps us is going to assume that we see what they're seeing, and it's just not true all the time. And our images come in at 32 a second. So we're not even conscious of the fact that sometimes we're seeing different things. We're just conscious of the fact that we're not quite sure of something. So the key to all of this is having the control of our perception. And then when we do our reading exercises, we spell read. So if you came to the word cat, you would spell C-A-T to me and I would tell you cat. And quite frankly, that's what adults do anyway. Because if you're sitting next to somebody and you don't know a word, you're going to say, Sue, what's G-I-F-T? You're never going to say, what's G-I-F-T-U? Right? And then when it comes to words, we look these little words up in the dictionary, we make a model for the meaning of the, and then we make the word. So we have a 3D image of the actual meaning of the, believe it or not, there is one. And then we filled in one of those 217 blanks. And as an adult, you can make a meaning for any word. You can make a meaning for mitigate. And when you're studying, if you go to the glossary and you actually make models for those glossary terms, you don't really need to read the textbook, to be honest, because it got that really in-depth understanding. So just to let you know, that's what I'm talking about when we're talking about learning the Apple Mac way. So okay. More to process.
Yeah, there's a lot more I got to learn or understand about this.
And you don't have to. I'm just very happy that you've had this time to spend with us. And it's important to know everybody's perceptions of this. Because one of our goals with these podcasts is to talk the dis out of dyslexia. I mean, nobody goes near a word that begins with dis. You don't want to go there. Somebody can't do something. Somebody's unable. But dis honestly only actually means difficulty. And the difficulty, yes, we do have a difficulty, but it's because of our teaching system, and we need to change our teaching system so that it encompasses both. It doesn't have to be one side or the other. There can be a method that can work for both, whether you're an Apple Mac or a PC.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where we're going. Leave us with some thoughts, Henry. No pressure.
No pressure.
It's okay.
So now I'm kind of stumped.
That's okay. Are you stumped because what we've said needs lots of time to process?
Yeah, I want to try to understand. But yeah, I get needing to visualize things to properly understand it. And then also modifying the education system to help accommodate that. Makes sense.
If we can deliver a way of learning to read and a way of learning to write and a way of doing math that actually reaches you, whether you're a PC or an Apple Mac, then the challenges won't happen.
I think that most people aren't as like kind of homogeneous, or specifically, I guess, people who are dyslexic. Like there's definitely some people like at Fraser Academy who are able to pick up reading a lot better than others. And maybe they weren't as good in the woodworking shop, or maybe they weren't as good as in music. And I think that applies to a lot of students. There's some things that you're just going to have to work harder on. And I know for me personally, it was a lot easier to kind of be like, oh, well, I have some learning disability, therefore I don't need to work as hard on this. And I just slacked off and procrastinated and used it as an excuse, which I don't think was good. Maybe a lot of people have dyslexia, or there's a lot of people who might have other issues. And that kind of being like, hey, there's going to be some things, some subjects, some topics that you're going to have to work on a lot harder than other people, and you're not going to get it as quickly. And I think that's just part of everyone. I don't know how a lot of people think. And maybe there is a big discrepancy between people who think in a dyslexic way and then people who, for lack of a better word, think in a normal way. But I feel like out of both groups, everyone's an individual. Everyone has issues with some things and with others. As Tristan knows, with jiu-jitsu, there's one move that I just can't get. And then there's other moves where you just get in an instant. And yeah, it's different for everyone. And yes, if you're dyslexic, you might have an issue with this topic. And maybe some people who are even more severely dyslexic will need a lot more help. But remember that you might be like a great musician, or you might be very good with woodworking.
Yes, if you're dyslexic, you're going to have a harder time learning it. But if you introduce these methods of teaching, they may still struggle, but at least that stigma of, oh, I'm not very smart, is less weight on their shoulders.
I think it's the more education, the better. I think one of the biggest things is exposure.
Yeah.
Exposure to different arts, exposure to different sports, exposure to different ideas, as many ideas as possible, as many different ways of learning, and then you'll pick up what works for you.
Yeah.
And the more things you try, you're going to find something you like. You're going to find your passion. You're going to find what works for you. And you're not going to put yourself down, because obviously there's social pressure to kind of put people down who are different. But I think a lot of it is also internal. And then to get people to accomplish their goal after you've exposed everyone to all these different ideas, different sports, different ways of learning, you need to instill kind of like a duty or a sense of responsibility, so then people can go out and accomplish their goals and get where they want to be. And also, I think it's important to explain to kids, school isn't meant to be easy. It's like life. It's a struggle. There's suffering, and you don't want to always be trying to avoid it at all costs, because then you won't accomplish your goals. And then you don't want to be nihilistic and be like, oh, well, the world just sucks and it's all suffering, so I'm just going to fade away.
But if you take away unnecessary suffering, it's like school's going to be tough for anybody. It's supposed to throw you out into the real world. But if you're already at a position where you are behind, and if you can lessen the suffering for that person by introducing more ways of learning, that can help also the normal students as well as the students with this gift or disability, however you want to define it. You would still struggle in learning, but at least there'd be a bit more of a...
I get what you're saying. Yeah. It's like you need something to kind of be proud of, because you're not just constantly putting yourself down. Like, I remember at Fraser Academy, there was a couple students who had issues with spelling, like severely, but
I still do.
Yeah. And me too. Spell check's great. So, but they were really, really good at playing the guitar, or they're really good at music. So they always had that thing that they could be proud of. And I think that if you get as much exposure, try as many new things as you can, you'll find something that clicks. And there's suffering that you kind of put on yourself internally. But what I meant by kind of suffering is that there are things that are external, and that there's a lot worse things than having to put your head down and grind through a textbook or work on some school project. But there's still that aspect of whatever goal you want is on the other side of hard work, and that hard work can be considered suffering. And if someone wants to accomplish their goal, they need to expect, okay, it's going to be hard to get there. You need to take responsibility for your actions and take control of your own life, and you're going to accomplish your goals. And I think, if you want to stop people from having that internal voice in your head that's kind of putting you down, you need to get exposed to all these different things, so you know, this is what I enjoy, or this is what I'm naturally good at, and there's something you can be proud about.
When you have a continuum between the sound-based learning and the image-based learning, everybody occupies their own space on that continuum. And so you do have people who only think with sound and a little picture, some only picture and a little sound. You can divide the world up into three, mostly sound, mostly image, and a good mixture. So there are as many different types of dyslexia as there are dyslexics, number one. School shouldn't be tough, and we always put hard with work. Why do we do that? Work doesn't have to be hard. And it's like there's no pain, no gain mentality that I don't think needs to be there. But that's another topic we could go to. And the other thing is, if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result, it's the definition of insanity. So you've got to change what's happening now, because a third of the population are not being taught in the way they learn. It's just not happening. And so if you think of it, you're not sending kids into school with an equal opportunity. What they make of that opportunity is totally up to them. But they're not going into school with that cognitive equal opportunity at the moment. And I think that's unfair. And the bit that really bugs me is when I'm getting kids come to me really truthfully believing themselves to be stupid. I can't handle that anymore.
No, I think what you're saying about equal opportunity is extremely important. I 100% agree.
We all agree on the responsibility part, right? We all agree on that part. And if you're able to be responsible for how you learn, then that's the beauty of it all.
Yeah.
Henry, we have to have you back.
Yeah, okay.
This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Henry. This was really cool. And I can totally see that we have another podcast looming. We have to get you back. And I'm very, very grateful for the time that you spent with us. If you have any questions for Henry, please do contact us at info@thewds.org, and we will pass them on to him. and we will look forward to him maybe joining us in the second series. Thank you so much, and here's to next time. Bye.